And welcome once again to the St Albans and District Talking Newspaper, serving St Albans, Harpenden and surrounding villages. This is the News Extra edition for the week ending Saturday the 28th of May 2022. My name is Steve and I am the editor and producer of this programme. In this programme we have our usual roundup of news stories from the current editions of the Hearts Advertiser and St Albans Review. We'll also have our selection of interesting national radio programmes coming up in the next week, which will be read by John. Then we'll have a selection of audio-described TV programmes for this coming week, and as usual, this is by courtesy of the Otley Talking News. As we are now approaching Her Majesty the Queen's Platinum Jubilee celebrations, we have some items about that. Then we'll have the first airing of the second episode in the new series of the 10 Today exercise programme. And finally, we have this week's birthdays and events this week in the past. The music in this programme is called Jazz 3 and is by Gothby. So now the news, and in a week when it's fair to say that serious news is thin on the ground, our readers today are very familiar voices, Ian, Wendy, Andy, and a new voice reading for the first time, Christina.
Hello, I'm Ian. Saints march out to the tune of £12,000 for Ukraine. Supporters, officials and players at St Albans City Football Club have raised more than £12,000 for Ukraine relief efforts at a charity match and fun day. The Saints' recent Game for Ukraine against Dagenham and Redbridge slashed the £10,500 target to meet a grand total of £12,132.98, every penny of which will go to the Disasters Emergency Committee, Ukraine Humanitarian Appeal, providing aid for those working in the war-torn nation and surrounding countries during the ongoing crisis. Fans purchased match-worn shirts from either side after the event and took part in a half-time penalty competition and crossbar challenge, and Saints captain David Noble's shirt was auctioned for more than £350. The event was backed by team sponsors Enter Shikari, with bassist Chris Batten making his match debut for the club during the game. The group said, "As already proud sponsors of St Albans City FC, and as a band who've played Ukraine many times and made some good friends there, we're thrilled that the team's Game for Ukraine initiative was able to raise a significant amount of money for humanitarian aid in the region. We're also immensely proud of Chris for getting away with it well enough not to show us up." Following his performance, Chris has since taken the difficult decision to end his professional football career on this incredible high and will retire to continue his dreams of gainful employment in the entertainment industry. Chris's shirt from the game was also put up for raffle, raising an impressive £1,500. Chairman Lawrence Levy added, "The whole campaign has been a huge success and something I am very proud of, and I'd like to add my thanks to everyone who contributed for their generosity. As those of you at the game will know, we had a number of Ukrainians in attendance, some of whom have loved ones and family members still in the country, and we'd like to express our continued support for anyone in our community in such a position." And this front page article is accompanied by a picture of Enter Shikari's Chris Batten making his debut on the pitch.
Hello, this is Wendy. And my first story is St Albans Garden Centre dedicates fundraising year to brain tumour research. An amateur footballer's shock diagnosis inspired a St Albans Garden Centre to pledge its support to a brain tumour charity. Burston Garden Centre chose Brain Tumour Research as its official charity of the year after the co-owner's son, Shay Emerton, was found to have the condition. Shay suffered a seizure while playing football in April last year and went into respiratory arrest. Luckily, an anaesthetist playing for the opposition was able to revive him, and the 25-year-old, from St Albans, was rushed to hospital where scans detected a grade 2 glioma. He underwent surgery to remove 98% of the tumour, but he suffered supplementary motor area syndrome, which left him temporarily paralysed down his right-hand side. Now on the road to recovery, Shay is preparing to run the TCS London Marathon in October with his brother Connor, also in aid of the charity. Shay's mum, Dawn Emerton, said, Shay's diagnosis came as a huge shock to us all, but he has amazed us with his resilience and determination and continues to get stronger each day. His experience has made us determined to do all we can to support brain tumour research in order to help improve treatment options for Shay and the many others like him who are facing an uncertain future. The Garden Centre has already donated £5 from the sale of every yellow magnolia to Brain Tumour Research, the colour matching the charity's brand. In March, it supported the charity's flagship Wear a Hat Day event, where staff dressed in hats and charity T-shirts and took to social media to help spread awareness, whilst in April it hosted a Make and Decorate an Easter Hat event, with proceeds going to the charity. It also teamed up with fellow St Albans Garden Centre, Aylett Nurseries, to host fundraising coffee mornings complete with raffles and lucky dips. As part of National Children's Gardening Week on May 31st, Burston will be hosting a children's pebble decorating event. As part of the Queen's Platinum Jubilee, children visiting the centre will have the opportunity to decorate their very own royal crowns, and on June the 17th, during British Flower Week, staff will don flower-covered hats in support of the charity's Wear a Hat Day with Flowers fundraiser. One of Burston's managers, Jill Wharf, said, "We've planned lots of events to support brain tumour research and are particularly excited about Wear a Hat Day with Flowers. What could be a better fit than fundraising and flowers?" Charlie Allsbrook, Community Development Manager for Brain Tumour Research, said, "It's wonderful to have Burston Garden Centre choose us as its Charity of the Year, and especially exciting in the run-up to Wear a Hat Day with Flowers. We know the team has lots of ideas for fundraising and awareness days for the rest of the year and look forward to seeing them come to fruition. We're also very much looking forward to cheering Shay across the finish line in October and wish him the best of luck with his marathon training."
Hello, my name is Andy and my first item has the headline, "Church Welcomes Gay Community for Pub Pride Launch." A St Albans church is hosting the launch party for a series of gay pride events taking place across the city next week. The city's pub pride will be kicking off at St Saviour's Church on Sandpit Lane on Friday, May 27th, with an event to celebrate life and love in all its rainbows of colour. This newspaper spoke to St Saviour's Vicar Father Richard Watson about diversity within Christianity and the relationship between heteronormativity, the assumption that everyone is or should be straight, and the church. He said, "I've been vicar of St Saviour's Church for 5 years now, and very early on we discussed how we might be more proactive in terms of supporting LGBTQ+ members of the community as a whole, and offering a true welcome to them. The result of that conversation was that we signed up with Ask for Clive with founder Danny Clare, and were the first place of worship to do so, aligning our commitment with theirs to say that everyone is welcome here. Christians have a range of responses to sexuality matters, but the Church of England is changing, and its response to gay people, and I am certain that things will continue to change in the years ahead." At St Saviour's, we take seriously the verse in John's first letter that says, "God is love, and those who live in love live in God, and God lives in them," which is quoted at the beginning of every marriage service. In my understanding, it is ludicrous and untenable for the church to deny equality in marriage to same-sex couples. We are very pleased to be welcoming Ask for Clive for the launch of their Pub Pride event, and St Albans should be rightly proud to be the home as what has now become a national event, reflecting the change in our society to recognise that love is love and offering a true welcome to all people. For the church, the big issue is how we interpret teachings in the light of modern living and understanding. It is very easy for us to pick and choose which bits of the Bible we pick up and run with. in which case maybe we should pay as much attention to those verses which prohibit the wearing of clothes made from mixed fibres or not eat shellfish. St. Saviour's has a mixed congregation and an inclusive statement about weddings and blessings. It states, "Regrettably, at the present time, we are not legally able to offer marriage in church for same-sex couples, but we believe the Church of England should, and in time will, change its pastoral practice. In the meantime, it is possible for any couple to have prayers following a civil partnership or civil marriage." The vicar explained that in a previous parish, other clergy have refused to work with him because of his theological understanding of sexuality. Venues across St Albans will be opening their doors in celebration of Pub Pride on Friday evening, with many of the city's landmarks illuminated in rainbow colours, including the museum and cathedral. There will also be photo stops and other pop-ups around the city centre, and confirmed events include film screenings, Pride Classic karaoke, community group meet-ups, and even rural walks.
Hello, my name is Christina, and my first story is about council tax rebates. Have you had your council tax rebate yet? Not all St Albans council taxpayers will have received their one-off rebate, the Hearts ad can reveal. As part of its targeted response to rising energy bills, earlier this year the government introduced a £150 council tax rebate. This means that council tax costs will not rise for the majority of people, including those on the lowest incomes. The rebate will provide a payment of £150 to households living in council tax bands A to D. The rebate will be provided as a separate payment from April 2022, rather than as part of your council tax bill, and will not need to be paid back. But although the majority of payments have been made to St Albans district households over the last few months, SADC has yet to complete the rollout in full. An SADC spokesperson revealed, "We have around 18,200 eligible households in Band A to D properties who were paying their council tax by direct debit prior to April 1, 2022. And we have already paid 17,600 of these households, so over 95% of them. The majority of direct debit cases which haven't been paid will be where the council tax is being paid by a third party, and we are writing to these households so that they can confirm who should receive the payment. For customers who set up a direct debit after April the 1st, we are carrying out additional checks in order to prevent fraud. These checks mean it will take slightly longer to pay these households, but we are already making payments to these applicants, and also those people who pay their council tax by other methods, and more of these households will receive payments over the next 2 to 3 weeks. Any households who believe they are entitled and who have yet to receive their payment or a letter from us inviting them to apply for the payment should contact the council so that we can investigate further."
This is the weekly Westminster Diary of St Albans MP Daisy Cooper. What is the private members' bill ballot? Hot on the heels of the Queen's speech, which kicks off a new parliamentary term, another ritual took place in Westminster, the annual private members' bill ballot. This gives MPs who are not in government the chance to propose a new law. A draft law is called a bill. While MPs submit their own bills at other times of the year, there is little to no chance that they will ever become law. They are used as a vehicle to raise awareness or highlight a particular issue. But with the ballot, the top 20 bills jump to the front of the queue, giving them a greater chance of being debated in Parliament, and a much greater chance that they will actually become law. So who or what decides which MPs can put bills forward at this time? Essentially, it boils down to a game of bingo. Each MP who wants to put forward a bill picks a number. They write their name next to the number in a big book. This year, 460 MPs fancied their chances. Some MPs arrived early so they could pick their lucky number. Others just turned up and picked one at random. Once the ballot is closed and MPs can no longer add their names to the book, the numbers are selected in a public forum. Corks, with numbers on them, are placed in a large fishbowl, and then 10 corks are picked out at random. Although 20 numbers are drawn, it's the top 7 to 10 slots that are really coveted, because only those few are likely to get a day for debate in Parliament before the time allotted for these bills runs out. The cast in this little piece of theatre includes the Deputy Speaker, who plays the role of bingo caller, a clerk assistant wearing white gloves who gets to rummage around in the fishbowl to select the corks, and a glamorous assistant, the Deputy Speaker's words, not mine, who says which MP the number refers to. Despite the process being pretty archaic, the outcome definitely has its merits. Last year's ballot produced the British Sign Language Act, a weighty and important piece of legislation that made its way into law and is making a difference to people's lives. I am really looking forward to seeing which bills emerge this year.
Peregrine falcon chick hatches at St Albans Cathedral in a city first. A peregrine falcon chick has successfully hatched at St Albans Cathedral, making history as the first of the species to be born in the city. Earlier in the month, it was announced that a pair of peregrines had bred on the cathedral for the first time ever and that 2 eggs had been laid. Since then, there has been cautious excitement in the countdown to the eggs hatching, along with high levels of interest in the falcons from birdwatchers and the local community, who have been visiting the cathedral grounds to spot them. The chick hatched last week in a purposely installed nesting tray in a location very high up on the cathedral and is being tended to by its parents. The Peregrine Project is part of the larger Wilder St Albans scheme, a collaboration between the Herts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust and St Albans City and District Council. The Wilder St Albans team linked up with local ornithologist and licensed bird ringer Barry Trevis to construct and install the nesting tray at the cathedral. Heidi Carruthers, Wilder St Albans project officer, said, "It is thrilling to see a chick has hatched safely and we are all really excited to follow the bird's journey on to fledging. Peregrines are such an iconic species, so it's fitting to have them making a home on the most iconic building in St Albans. There has been a lot of interest in the bird, so we're hoping that we can use this as an opportunity to teach people about these birds and the other wonderful wildlife all around us in Hertfordshire. It is the first time the inexperienced pair have bred and one of the eggs has failed to hatch." Barry Trevis said, "With the first egg having hatched over the period 16th to 17th of May, it now appears that the second egg will not hatch so long after the first. It is probably infertile, with an inexperienced new breeding pair that is not particularly unusual. At least we have one chick, and considering the sheltered and secure nest position, with the benefits of cover that the tray provides, plus plenty of food around, then it should survive to fledging around the last week of June. To celebrate the successful breeding of the peregrine pair, St Albans Cathedral ran a poll to name the birds, resulting in Boudica and Alban winning the public vote." Kevin Walton, Canon Chancellor of St Albans Cathedral, said, "We are very pleased to welcome our new peregrine falcon to its temporary home in the cathedral tower, and as it prepares to take to the skies, we wish upon it God's blessing. Congratulations also to Alban and Boudica." About peregrine falcons. The adult peregrine is a powerful bird of prey with blue-grey plumage, a white face and a contrasting black moustache. It is extremely quick and agile. It holds the record for being not only the fastest bird in the world, but also the fastest member of the animal kingdom, with a diving speed in excess of 200 miles per hour. Numbers of the species fell through the first half of the 20th century to critical levels in the 1960s, but today peregrine falcons are protected by law as a Schedule 1 listed species of the Wildlife and Countryside Act. With it now being an offence to disturb the birds in any way, their numbers are slowly increasing, albeit with an estimated 1,500 breeding pairs nationwide, their recovery still has a long way to go. Peregrines are only found in a small number of isolated spots in the southeast of England, and the St Albans pair are only one of five breeding in Hertfordshire. Hearts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust, St Albans Cathedral and RSPB East have teamed up to deliver regular peregrine watch events so that the public can enjoy seeing these majestic birds close up. Starting on Saturday, May 28th, and running over every weekend and bank holiday until Sunday, July 17th, between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m, they will set up an area within the Abbey Orchard where telescopes will be trained on the peregrines and their chicks. Additionally, there will be a camera and small screen for one of the telescopes, which will make watching the birds accessible, particularly for children or adults in wheelchairs. Volunteers will be on hand to provide information, literature, and to answer questions about the birds. The article is accompanied by a picture of a little tiny chick. It's all fluffy and white, and it's got its mouth wide open, waiting for some food from its parents. Very sweet.
My next item has the headline, Park Deck Chairs Banned for Health and Safety. Oversized deck chairs, which have proved a summer smash for users of a St Albans park, have been pulled from use following issues over licensing and health and safety. The giant seats were introduced by Italian restaurant and cafes Verdi's at Clarence Park during the heart of the pandemic back in summer 2020. After the eatery was given the go-ahead to sell takeaway alcohol in the park, it then provided free picnic tables and deck chairs for park users to enjoy, even if they weren't using the restaurant's services. But the deck chairs have now been pulled from use by St Albans District Council, which says their location breached the restaurant's licence and there was not sufficient due diligence over related health and safety. Councillor Josie Maddock, chair of the Clarence Park Consultative Forum, said it was a complicated issue. She explained, Verdi's have a certain set area outside their restaurant, which is their licensed area and where they are permitted to put tables and chairs. The deck chairs were placed far and wide outside this area. This means it's a breach of their license by quite a long way. This is a problem because of a couple of reasons. Firstly, the customer perception of and understanding is that the deck chairs belong to Verdi's, as that is where the bulk of them originate from, and therefore that they should buy something from Verdi's to be able to sit in them. Secondly, anything outside their licensed area is not their legal responsibility. The chairs therefore become the responsibility of the council and the park. However, their health and safety cannot be verified. Anything, as you can imagine, that is in the park has to be carefully checked and maintained on a regular basis. And if these chairs have not been checked, then the risk is that there will be a nasty accident involving little fingers, as we all know deck chairs can be a bit vicious. We'd like to know we are comfortable with the quality and safety of them before allowing them into the wider park, or that Verdi's take full responsibility for them but keep them within their licensed area. But Councillor Maddock also offered hope for their return. If Verdi's wanted to discuss with us the possibility of doing this with proper process and due diligence, it's a definite possibility that we might see the deck chairs come back. It just needs to be done the right way to ensure the license is not being breached and that, more importantly, we are happy with the safety of them. However, Charlotte Chesney from Verdi's refutes the claim made by St Albans District Council. We are absolutely not in breach of our license or lease, and as such, Councillor Maddock is misinformed. There is nothing in our lease or license that states we cannot lend anyone a chair for use in the park. What we can't do is extend our tables and chairs for serving outside our allocated park seating area. Furthermore, no formal approach has been made to us requesting us to stop for that reason. With regards to health and safety, there has been absolutely no reference to this until they instructed us to stop, and then only after the event. So no discussion, no negotiation, and certainly no solution offered. The chairs are covered by our own public liability insurance in any event, but even that hasn't been explored, and again no approach has been made to us requesting we stop providing the chairs for that reason. One solution might be that we rent them for £1 and donate the money to charity. This would mean the hirer then has the overall responsibility, stroke liability, for the chair.
My second story is a bridleway resurfacing. A former councillor has proudly unveiled her final legacy, a resurfaced bridleway stretching more than 700 metres through the St Albans countryside. Prior to the recent elections, Francis Leonard, who served as district councillor for Sandridge and Jersey Farm for many years, had been working to improve the bridleway running parallel to Oaklands Lane from the Cooper's Green Lane roundabout to the site of the building company Cemex. But even though she lost her seat in May's vote, she is pleased to see the project finally reach its fruition. Francis explained, "The field behind was quarried some years ago and the land reinstated, but there was a bridleway that crossed the land that had to be diverted when quarrying started. The surface of the diverted bridleway was very poor, and when I got involved through other work that I was doing with a resident of Smallford, we decided to approach Cemex to see if there was anything that could be done, as it certainly wasn't fit for use by cyclists and horse riders, as it was too dangerous. Last October, I arranged a meeting with Cemex General Manager Lewis Coxon and his colleagues to discuss options. The reception we received was very encouraging, with Lewis agreeing immediately to the bridleway work. The new bridleway is clearly already being used by horse riders and cyclists and pedestrians, and my ultimate aim is to provide a safe walking route from Jersey Farm, Marshalswick, to the large amount of open space at Smallford and the Alban Way beyond. I was particularly impressed with the helpful and positive attitude shown by Lewis, and with his help, there are already plans to make further improvements along the route. I need to engage with other agencies, mainly the County Council, to make further connections along the route, but having such fantastic support from a company working locally is very encouraging."
And this is from the letters page, a letter by Mike Joyner entitled "Looking Back So We Can Look Forward." It's accompanied by a picture of Station Road in Harpenden, which he describes in his letter. "A few years ago, I did a little work for the Harpenden History Society. I was digitising their index cards with the corresponding photos. Their photos of Harpenden in years gone by numbered into the thousands. Many of these were well over 100 years old. I'd been asked in the past that if I could time travel forward or backwards, which would I choose? Well, that was easy to answer. Definitely back in time, with a few stops on the way. My first stop would be 1965, the year of my birth. It makes sense that learning from the past goes some way to learning about our future. Most of us learn by our mistakes if we're wise enough. I'd like to know what 1965 was like as an adult. My only concern would be how to cope without my iPhone. My next stop would be 100 years ago, when Harpenden really was a village, and the car was totally outnumbered by horse and cart. If you travel back to the late 1800s, you probably wouldn't recognise much of Harpenden. The attached photo is looking up Station Road. On the right is what we now know as the Harpenden Arms pub. On the left of the photo is Home Farm, one of several farms along the High Street. Before the arrival of the railway in the late 1860s, Station Road was known as Staker's Lane, until it was changed to Station Road in 1898. The farm was demolished in 1894 to make room for shops, and the Harpenden Arms was known as Station Hotel. Learning about the history of our beautiful little town will help us learn how to look after its future. I hope that in 100 years' time we can still call Harpenden a quaint little town. For that to happen, it's up to us to continue that legacy.
Beating the Bounds ceremony returns to St Albans. An ancient ceremony with its roots in the Middle Ages was repeated in St Albans last Sunday. The traditional custom of beating the bounds dates back 700 years to 1327 and involves a leisurely walk along the city's 4.5-mile boundary. During the event, wands made out of willow were used to beat the ground at significant locations. In the past, the ceremony was used for people to pass on knowledge of where the city's boundaries lay and to exert their rights as citizens. This year's procession was led by outgoing St Albans Mayor, Councillor Edgar Hill. Residents and visitors were invited to attend the walk, which started at 2 p.m. at the Pudding Stone in front of Kingsbury Mill in St Michael's Village, St Albans. Prayers were said along the route by the Mayor's chaplain, Reverend Kenneth Padley, and tour guide Stephen Potter took on the role of town crier. The walk took around 2 hours and ended at Verulamium Museum with tea and biscuits. Everyone participating in the event was given a special Beating the Bounds certificate. The mayor said before the event, "The weather forecast is looking good, so I would urge people to put a note in the diary and join me in Beating the Bounds to mark the historic boundaries of St Albans. In doing so, we will be upholding a tradition that dates back centuries, as well as having a lot of fun." The ceremony has its roots in a rebellion in medieval times against the authority of the established church. Following a riot by the townspeople against the abbot, 24 citizens walked around the town in 1327 to lay down its boundaries. They declared their rights and freedoms within this area should be respected, and their action has been celebrated since with the Beating the Bounds ceremony.
And here's an item about helping Ukraine. The headline is, "Young musicians raise more than £3,000 for Ukraine." Over 30 young musicians aged between 4 and 17 performed a special concert in aid of Ukrainian relief efforts. The event, which took place before an audience of more than 100 people in St Helen's Church, Wheatamstead, was the brainchild of Claire Partington, who runs C-sharp music tuition in the village. Reverend Richard Bannum, who introduced the concert, observed the difference between the situations here in the UK and the war-torn East European nation. Here, where we can enjoy the peace and serenity of our beautiful 13th century church, contrasting the devastation that we see every day on the news in so many towns and cities in Ukraine. The audience included Ukrainians who have only just arrived, together with their Wheatamstead host families, who met with VIP guest concertmaster Oksana Gomanchuk, who has only recently arrived in the UK herself, and who worked at the Tchaikovsky National Music Academy in Kiev. Opening the concert, two of the younger musicians, 5-year-old Ralph Denny and 8-year-old Christian Girotto, invited the audience to stand for their piano duet of the Ukrainian national anthem, which they had memorized in just a few weeks before a program of piano and string pieces was performed. Claire Partington said, "At a time when, in some quarters, young people get bad press for being consumed by their electronic devices and being detached from the real world, it was so pleasing to see them donating their time and talents to this good cause. It takes many hours to reach the standard of playing required for their first public performance." One of the performers, Elaine, aged 12, said, "I think I'm doing this fundraising concert for Ukrainians because I have this friend at school. She's Ukrainian. She has relatives back in Ukraine. I think it must be really stressful to be worrying about them every day and hope that they are okay. so I just want to show my support. Special guest councillor Annie Brewster, vice chairman of Hertfordshire County Council, added, "I will never forget this concert. I've rarely been so moved as to hear Oksana Gamanchuk play the mesmerising piano version of Melody by Ukrainian composer Mieroslav Skorik. To think Oksana has a husband and 27-year-old son still in Ukraine is simply heartbreaking. The fundraising total has already smashed £3,000.
My third story is about the Mayor's Triathlon. St Albans' fifth Mayor's Triathlon has raised £3,000 for a young people's mental health charity. Mayor Councillor Edgar Hill and his consort Caroline Lee both took part in the event, along with 50 other competitors of all ages and abilities who had to cycle, swim and run in order to complete the challenge. The money raised will go to provide Youth Talk, which offers free counselling sessions for youngsters in the community who are struggling with their mental health. Westminster Lodge General Manager Leslie Garner said, "The atmosphere was absolutely brilliant at this event, and everyone who took part was buzzing with excitement. There was so much support from friends and fellow competitors for each triathlete, and a lot of money raised for a fabulous cause. We are so proud of everyone."
And that's the end of the news. And now the list of people whose deaths were announced in this week's edition of the Hearts Advertiser. Bill Batchelor, aged 82 years. Thomas Brennan. Susan Dow. Elsie Goss, aged 94. Terry Gray. And Eddie Paris, aged 78. Now, a little more of Jazz 3 by Goffby, and then we'll have our selection of interesting national radio programmes coming up this week, which, as usual, is read by John.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, May 28th. And of course it is the week of the Queen's Platinum Jubilee celebrations. So we start with a BBC World Service programme in which Emma Barnett looks at the largely unseen side of the monarch. It reveals how across her reign the Queen has handled some of the thorniest global issues. Some of her dealings, though, have been more satisfactory than others. When President Ceausescu of Romania came to Buckingham Palace, he apparently made off with a load of her furniture. Tune in to the BBC World Service at 12:05 for the documentary The Royal Diplomat. Staying with Saturday, the drama on Radio 4 at 2:45 is pretty vacant. A housing charity has offered a high-spec apartment block for free, which seems almost too good to be true. Then a local journalist asks where the benefactor's money is coming from, and the alarm bells start to ring. Then at 5:30 on Radio 4, Political Thinking with Nick Robinson, in which each week the Today presenter has a conversation with the people who shape our political views and asks what shapes theirs. Opera on 3 at 6:30 on Radio 3 is Harrison Birtwhittle's Gawain. Following the composer's death last month, it's another chance to hear a performance of his 1991 opera, recorded in May 2014 at London's Barbican. And finally for Saturday, football fans, particularly those of Liverpool, may be keen to hear the live commentary of the Champions League final. It's Liverpool versus Real Madrid. It's at 8 o'clock on Radio 5 Live. Sunday, May 29th, Lauren Laverne's guest on Desert Island Discs is actor David Harewood. It's on Radio 4 at 11 a.m. Drama at 3, on Radio 4, is Agatha Christie's Giant's Bread. An aspiring composer whose work revolves around the sounds of everyday objects, travels to Russia seeking inspiration and struggles to regain his identity after the First World War. Then at 4:30 on Radio 4 comes Poetry Please. This week Fiona Benson joins Roger McGough to select poems from listeners' requests. To Radio 3 at 6:45 on Sunday, Between the Ears, to hear The Lark Ascending, Vaughan Williams' arguably most famous piece of music. It's reimagined here by Hinako Omori's Conversations with a Lark, plus the sounds of Surrey larks captured by Lucy Hodson in the North Downs. Alternatively, on Radio 2 at 7 p.m, Sunday night is Music Night. Larry Blank conducts the BBC Concert Orchestra and Big Band in celebration of Brooklyn-born composer and lyricist Harry Warren, who wrote more than 800 songs, including Jeepers Creepers, I Only Have Eyes for You, and The More I See You. On to programmes, then, that are broadcast each day at the same time, every weekday, Monday to Friday, on the same radio station. So same time, same radio station, each day, all week. Book of the Week at 9:45 each day on Radio 4 is Black Gold, Jeremy Paxman's social history of coal mining in England, Scotland and Wales. He looks at how coal changed the world, how countless lives were shaped by it and indeed ended by it. He recounts the death of 136 miners in the Seaham Colliery disaster of 1880, in which the funeral service was attended by 30,000 people. And the Times saw fit to include the fact that the colliery owner was there while suffering from gout. Composer of the Week each day at 12 noon on Radio 3 is George Frederick Handel. Donald MacLeod explores Handel's crucial relationship with the British monarchy, how he and George I and II forged a new sense of British culture and identity. How to Steal a Trillion at 1:45 each day on Radio 4 traces Britain's role in the growth of offshore money laundering. Radio 4 Extra at 2:15 each day for the dramatisation of Maya Angelou's second autobiography, Gather Together in My Name, which depicts a single mother's slide down the social ladder into poverty and crime. Book at Bedtime each night at 10:45 on Radio 4 is Jonathan Coe's Mr. Wilder and Me. In the summer of 77, a young woman travels to a Greek island that has been turned into a film set and finds herself working for the famed Hollywood director Billy Wilder, a glamorous experience that soon changes her life for good. Also at 10:45 each night is the essay Composers and Their Dogs on Radio 3, in which Fiona Stafford explores links between famous composers and their chosen dog breeds. And she starts with Wagner's love of Newfoundland. Let's go through the highlights then for each day for the rest of the week. Monday, May 30th, The Untold at 11 a.m. on Radio 4 looks at how a barber's in Pudsey in Yorkshire managed to stay afloat during the lockdown. A story of everyday life in the UK. The drama at 2:15 on Radio 4 is Barbecue 67, The Original Summer of Love. It's May 1967 and thousands of people descended upon the Tulip Bulb Auction Hall in Spalding, Lincolnshire for what turned out to be the world's first rock festival. Jimi Hendrix, Cream and The Move were all on the bill. A retired farmer bonds with a Romanian labourer as he shares his memories of attending this rock festival. Just a Minute with Sue Perkins is in the chair at 6:30 on Monday on Radio 4. Competing this week, Dane Baptiste, Jade Adams, Jan Ravens and Paul Merton. 8 o'clock on Radio 4, The Little Black Book. Lawrence Legal reveals the story behind the guidebook written by his mother in the 1980s, which provides young black men with advice on how to avoid police harassment. And it's followed at 8:30 on Radio 4 by a new series of Analysis. Edward Staunton asks who Russia's allies and friends are and looks at the nation's influence overseas. On to Tuesday, May 31st, last day of the month, of course. A.D. Smith has Tourette's syndrome, commonly thought of as a swearing disorder. But in reality, 90% of people with the condition do not swear. A.D. meets people with incredible talents and successful careers who've overcome the struggles and the stigma. That's The Truth About Tourette's, 11 a.m, Radio 4. Also on 4, the drama at 2:15, the Penny Dreadfuls present Richard III Rebothered. It's a spoof sketch comedy by this comedy trio turning their gaze on Richard III. followed at 3 on Radio 4 by Shortcuts, Josie Long presents short documentaries and audio adventures inspired by unusual sound worlds. At 4 o'clock on Radio 4, A Laureate for Elizabeth, in which William Seacart looks at the work of the 7 poet laureates who've served during the Queen's reign. Great Lives at 4:30 on Radio 4 follows it. It's nearly June 2022, marking the centenary of the birth of Judy Garland, the child star who became one of the most famous entertainers of the 20th century. Her life is celebrated by the writer Susie Boyd. To Radio 3 at 7:30 for Radio 3 in Concert, a music by Tchaikovsky, Brahms, and it's recorded at London's Barbican on May the 22nd. Alternatively, File on 4 at 8 o'clock on Radio 4 looks at how the disinformation about the war in Ukraine isn't just emanating from Russia, but also from the UK too. And of course, it's Tuesday, so it's followed at 8:40 by In Touch with Peter White. Wednesday, June 1st, Happy New Month, Pinch Punch and all that. The Lady Killers with Lucy Worsley continues, and this week she visits County Durham to investigate the case of Mary Ann Cotton, who was sentenced to death for the murder of her stepson in 1872. Although she maintained her innocence, historians now believe she killed up to 21 people. Drama at 2:15 on Radio 4 is fledgling. Lockdown is explored from an unexpected angle. Thinking Aloud at 4 o'clock on Radio 4 looks at ballroom dancing and discusses its social history and sexual politics. And then Heresy at 6:30 on Radio 4. Victoria Corrin Mitchell is joined by her actor-comedian husband David Mitchell, former chair of the Conservative Party Baroness Saeed Awazi, and actor and presenter Miles Jupp to challenge established ideas about subjects including mediocrity and being at one with nature. And there's football, live football tonight at 7:45. And to finish Wednesday, June 1st, there's live football. Yes, I thought the season was over, but no, it's not. It's Radio 5 Live at 7:45 p.m. for Scotland's World Cup semi-final playoff against Ukraine. Thursday, June 2nd, from football to cricket. And the first day of the first test of England versus New Zealand. Yes, it feels like summer now. Commentary from Lords starts at 10:25 through to 7 o'clock on Radio 5 Live Sports Extra. 11:30 a.m. on Radio 4, Believe It, John Carter's fictional comedy biography of Richard Wilson. Richard wants a holiday, but he's not sure if he wants to leave his flat. Drama, also on Radio 4, at 2:15 is the penultimate episode of Our Friends in the North. Nicky has returned from Italy for his mother's funeral. Mary is now a Labour MP. Tosca and Elaine are about to launch their new business, a floating nightclub on the Tyne. Followed at 2:30 on Radio 4 by Claire Balding's Ramblings. She's on Tresco in the Scilly Islands with Mike Newhams, now retired as head gardener of its famous gardens. Radio 4, at 4 o'clock, comes Mary Portas on Style, in which she looks at menswear past, present and future, and visits London's V&A for its new exhibition, Fashioning Masculinities, the Art of Menswear. Afterlives, Ruth and Lisette, at 8:30 on Radio 4, considers the legacy of these two young women who became disabled just as they were on the threshold of adulthood. And at 9 o'clock on Classic FM, Music for Monarchy with Debbie Wiseman, the first of two programmes celebrating the life of the Queen through music. This covers her years as a princess, her role during the Second World War, and her first radio broadcast. On to Friday, June 3rd. It is another bank holiday. Thursday was a bank holiday. I got excited by the cricket. Friday is also a bank holiday. More programmes in celebration of the Queen's Platinum Jubilee, as you'd expect. 11 a.m, Radio 4, Witness the Queen's Coronation, which looks back at the 2nd of June 1953, when more than 8,000 people were inside Westminster Abbey for the coronation, and hundreds of thousands were lined the streets outside. At 10 past 11, there's a service of thanksgiving for the Queen's reign on Radio 4. Live from St Paul's, Eleanor Oldroyd describes the scene as senior members of the royal family and representatives from across the UK and Commonwealth gather in the cathedral, with Bible readings, prayers, congressional hymns and anthems sung by the choir of St Paul's. The afternoon drama at 2:15 on Radio 4 is Far Away Back of Beyond Place, a musical drama about a young musician's quest to find the truth about her family. Bill Patterson and folk musician Carine Polwart, a 6 times winner at the Radio 2 Folk Awards, star. 7:15 on Radio 4, a new series of Add to Playlist, a musical world of discovery exploring all musical styles, pop, rock, reggae, hip-hop, classical, jazz, folk and country. And we finish Friday, June 3rd, with part 2 of Classic FM's Music for Monarchy with Debbie Wiseman. A look at the Queen's commitment to an equal partnership of nations and her relationship with her grandchildren. Plus a story about the Queen and a comedian after the Royal Variety performance. It's on to finish the week at 9 o'clock on Classic FM. That's it then from us. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
Now we have a selection of audio-described TV programmes coming up this week. And this is from Otley Talking News, so many thanks to them.
Hello to you all, this is John from Otley Talking News, selecting and reading my choice of audio-described TV programmes for the week commencing Saturday the 28th of May and ending in Friday the 3rd of June. So, starting with the 28th of May, on Saturday, Ainsley's Good Mood Food is on ITV at 11:35am. Ainsley has a selection of dishes that feature green vegetables. Homes Under the Hammer is on BBC One at 12 noon and is followed by Bargain Hunt, still on BBC One, and today there in Lincolnshire. There's a wartime feature film, The Wooden Horse, on BBC Two at 12:25. The Prisoners of Stalagluf III hit on an ingenious plan to make an escape. Or Nanny McPhee is the film on Channel 4 at 4 o'clock. After the Brown family have employed and lost 17 nannies, salvation appears in the form of Nanny McPhee. At 5 on BBC Two, Animal Babies looks at a newborn elephant struggling to keep up with her fast-moving herd. Another film worth watching, I think, is Hidden Figures on Film 4 at 6:30pm. An inspirational true story of three African-American women working at NASA in the 1960s, and they're brilliant mathematicians. The Great Garden Revolution continues on Channel 4 at 8. The team visit a Bradford family, gardening beginners, to show them how to plant and grow food. At 8:50 on BBC One, Casualty, Paige and Rash are at pains to hide their relationship. Meanwhile, David must fight to save a patient from themselves. Channel 4 at 9pm, Secrets of the Queen's Coronation, an insight into how the coronation was staged on 2nd of June 1952. Mrs. Brown's Boys is on BBC One at 9:30. In Mummy's Coming, Agnes is shocked to hear about Winnie's amorous antics. On to Sunday the 29th of May. There are more Homes Under the Hammer on BBC One at 11:15am, and this is followed, still on One, by Bargain Hunt at 12:15. The Hairy Biker's Asian Adventure concludes in Thailand at 12:30 on BBC Two. BBC One has the animated comedy film Monsters University at 2pm. This is the Radio Times film of the day and follows the nerds and misfits as they are set a series of tasks to prove they are worthy of graduating with the scariest of scarers. A super Pixar story, well told. Attenborough and the Sea Dragon is on BBC One at 4:20. David examines 200 million year old remains of an ichthyosaur found on Dorset's Jurassic coast. Eden, Untamed Planet, is on BBC Two at 7:10. Galapagos, The Enchanted Isles. A look at how Galapagos became one of the most important areas of biodiversity in the world. Elizabeth, The Unseen Queen, is on BBC One at 7:45. The story of Queen Elizabeth II in her own words, showing home movie footage of her life and her childhood up till coronation in 1952. There's a celebration of Midsummer Murders on ITV starting at 7 with 25 Years of Mayhem. John Nettles and Neil Dudgeon amble down memory lane. This is followed at 8 with the latest episode, The Scarecrow Murders. The events at the annual Scarecrow Festival turn grisly when bodies start turning up alongside their straw creations. It's the final part of Gentleman Jack on BBC One at 9 in It's Not Legal. the marriage is threatened by internal and external forces. Conversations with Friends continues on BBC Three at 10. In part 7, Francis asks Bobby to move in. Now look at programmes that are on at the same time each weekday. The following daytime programmes are on BBC One. Homes Under the Hammer at 11:15, Bargain Hunt at 12:15, Doctors at 1:45. These programmes aren't on all week because of the Jubilee celebrations, so they're not on Thursday and Friday. Escape to the Country at 3 p.m, then on BBC Two, Animal Park at Longleat Safari Park can be seen at 6:30 p.m. Marcus Waring's Tales from the Kitchen Garden is on at 7 on BBC Two. And all the soaps are already described and are on at their usual times. Looking now at programmes on Monday the 30th of May. Food Unwrapped is on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. Jimmy Doherty examines the influence of Caribbean jerk seasoning. And Kate Quilton gets to stir the pot with a British porridge-making champion. Earth from Space is on BBC 4 at 8 p.m. Satellite cameras reveal our changing planet, showing a man who feeds parakeets in the middle of a mushrooming city. The Airport Back to the Skies is on BBC One at 8:30. Heathrow's Christmas Rush is hit by the Omicron variant, cutting passenger numbers by 60%. Silent Witness continues on BBC One at 9. In History, Florence Clark confesses to murdering her husband. The team must determine if all is as it seems. Alternatively, there's a new series of The New Elizabethans with Andrew Marr at 9 on BBC 4. Andrew examines the change in British society since the Queen ascended the throne in 1952. In this programme, Britain's moved from a class-obsessed society to a more liberal and inclusive one. Part 8 of Conversations with Friends is on BBC 3 at 10 p.m. Now on to Tuesday the 31st of May. DIY SOS The Big Build is on BBC One at 8. Nick Knowles and his team are in Northumberland, where they create a home which will accommodate Gareth, Mary and their three children, who also depend on their great-grandmother for extra help. Also at 8, but on Channel 5, The Yorkshire Vet. The vets respond to calls from a 16-year-old farmer who's worried about his pregnant ewe and a massive bull who needs a pedicure. Just the job for a young vet. The second part of History, The Silent Witness, is on BBC One at 9. The second part of New Elizabethans is on BBC Four at 9. Andrew Marr focuses on Britain's declining status as a world power after 1952, with the shrinking of its empire. Also at 9, The Black Death, Lucy Worsley investigates. In this second part, Lucy tries to understand what caused the plague, which arrived on our shores in 1348, and went on to wipe out around half the population. If you missed Who Do You Think You Are last Thursday, it's repeated on BBC One at 10:40 tonight. Sue Perkins hears poignant stories from a great-grandfather interned as an enemy alien during the First World War. Conversations with Friends continues at 10 on BBC Three. In part 9, Frances writes her first story about her relationship with Bobby. On to Wednesday the 1st of June, and let's start with The Repair Shop on BBC One at 8. The team celebrate the Queen's Platinum Jubilee by reviving items with royal connections, including a button-cupboard suit that belonged to the Pearly King of St Pancras, a lantern used in the ceremony of the keys at the Tower of London, a plate which celebrated the Queen's Golden Jubilee, and a tandem made by welding two normal bikes together and painting them red, white and blue for the Silver Jubilee. Also dates, but on BBC Four, is The Story of Welsh Art. Hugh Stevens views Welsh art in its earliest form in a burial chamber on Anglesey, and he sees Bronze Age artistry in the form of a gold cape found by chance in North Wales. The Prince's Master Crafters is on Sky Arts, that's for you, Channel 11, at 8 p.m. Jim Moyer continues to seek new crafters. This week he's looking for weavers. At 9 is DNA Family Secrets on BBC Two. Claire wants to know more about her father, who was a soldier during the Troubles in Northern Ireland, and Jenna and Ryan learn that they both have a genetic mutation that could be deadly if passed on to their kids. The Australian comedy spreadsheet continues on Channel 4 at 11.05 and 11.35. Lauren has an unfortunate accident which leads to an embarrassing meeting with a paramedic that she knows rather too well. At 10, BBC Two is going Inside Number 9. In Wise Owl, the cartoon character Wise Owl in the old public information films instilled a sense of right and wrong in Ronnie, which he has always followed. But what is right and what is wrong? A bit of nostalgia to end the day, maybe. The 1977 play for today, Abigail's Party, is being shown on BBC Four at 10 p.m. Beverly invites some of her neighbours over for a low-key gathering, but it is overshadowed by the noise from the daughter of one of the guests. Then events take a dramatic and unexpected turn as increasing amounts of alcohol are consumed. Thursday the 2nd of June. At 10 a.m. on BBC One is the Platinum Jubilee Tripping the Colour. Unfortunately, it's not already described, but you should get a flavour from the commentary. There's another Platinum event at 8 p.m. on BBC One, Platinum Beacons Lighting Up the Jubilee. Again, not already described, but the commentary should help you understand as the celebration beacons across the country are lit. At 1.55 p.m, the film on ITV is The Secret Life of Pets, an animated comedy. A pampered pooch is forced to share his home with a rescued mongrel. Hannah Fry is Making Sense of Cancer on BBC Two at 9 p.m. In January last year, she was diagnosed with cervical cancer. She's 36. This documentary follows Hannah as she records her own cancer journey with raw and emotional footage. 13 is a new drama on BBC Three at 9 p.m. about a woman who returns home after being held captive. A film to end the day on BBC Two is the fantasy comedy Yesterday. Jack is knocked off his bicycle during a freak power cut and wakes up to find himself in a world where no one has heard of the Beatles, so he takes advantage by passing off their songs as his. Finally, to Friday, 3rd of June. There's more celebration of the Jubilee with The Crown Jewels on BBC One at 7.30. Clive Myrie reveals the astonishing and complicated history of tens of thousands of jewels and crowns that constitute the nation's most valuable treasure. There's another episode of Devon and Cornwall at 8 p.m. on Channel 4. Steve and Hayley hope to tap into glamping by building a shepherd's hut to rent. Emma receives two new arrivals to her alpaca trekking business, and Matt and Barry seek ways to diversify their Teesmouth-based mussel fishing business. Moving on to BBC Two at 9, The Terror Infamy, the horror drama anthology series, concludes with two episodes. At 9, Come and Get Me, the Terminal Islanders return home, and then in The Afterlife at 9.40, as Hiroshima suffers, America celebrates. There's comedy on BBC One at 9.30 in The Other One. In a bid to heal his rift with Angela, Callum is lured to a Northern Soul revival. If you missed any of the conversations with friends this week, the episodes are repeated at 9, 9.30 and 9.55 this evening on BBC Three. Finally, Pride, a comedy based on a true story. At the height of the miners' strike, a group of gay and lesbian activists show their solidarity by raising money for the miners' families. The activist decides to deliver their donation in person and head for the Welsh village of Onthillyn. Sorry if that's mispronounced. I hope you find something of interest in my selection this week.
We are fast approaching the time of Her Majesty the Queen's Platinum Jubilee celebrations. She is the longest reigning monarch in British history, having surpassed Queen Victoria about 7 years ago. She is also the world's longest reigning female monarch ever, and of current kings and queens, she has the longest reign. In the list of longest reigning monarchs ever, she is currently third, having recently overtaken King Johann II of Liechtenstein, who reigned for 70 years and 91 days. Currently second is the late King Bhumibol of Thailand, who died in 2016, having been on the throne for 70 years and 126 days. As of when I'm producing this, the 26th of May 2022, our Queen has reigned for 70 years and 109 days. Therefore, she only needs to continue until the 13th of June, and she will move into second place in that list. The monarch who reigned the longest was Louis XIV of France, who was king from 1643 until 1715, and that was 72 years and 110 days. So, our Queen has a couple of years to go to beat Louis. Let's keep our fingers crossed. So now we have an article from this month's Hertfordshire Life magazine about the Queen's relationship with Hertfordshire, and it's read by Wendy.
The Queen of Hearts. With strong family links to Hertfordshire and a role in much of its recent history, the Queen, celebrating her Platinum Jubilee this year, has long been a big fan of the county, says the Hearts man who knows her well. And this is written by Robert Voss, CBE, Her Majesty's Lord Lieutenant of Hertfordshire. In 2015, the Queen became the longest-serving monarch in British history and the longest-serving female monarch anywhere in world history. In that time, and even before, she has had a close relationship with our county. During her amazing 70-year reign, Her Majesty has visited Hertfordshire many times in an official capacity, as well as spending time before and during her reign at St. Paul's Waldenbury near Hitchin, the home of the Bowes Lyon family, and where the Queen Mother spent her childhood. It is now the home of the Queen's cousin, Sir Simon Bowes Lyon, my predecessor, as Lord Lieutenant between 1986 to 2007, and his father, David Bowes Lyon, the Queen's uncle, who was Lord Lieutenant of Hertfordshire between 1952 to 1961. The Queen has also made private visits to Hatfield House, the stately home with long royal links going back to the Queen's namesake in the 16th century. Her Majesty's first visit as monarch was soon after her accession and before her coronation in July 1952, when she visited St. Albans Cathedral and then toured parts of the county on her way to the Bowes Lyon estate. This was followed 2 years later when she returned to St. Albans to open an aircraft hangar at what is now the de Havilland Aircraft Museum. One of the most significant visits was in 1957 when she distributed Royal Maundy money at St. Albans Cathedral, the first time these silver coins given by the monarch during Holy Week had been distributed outside London. Other significant visits include the opening of Stevenage Town Centre in 1959, when she toured the first post-war new town, including visiting a particularly excited young family in their new home. This was followed 4 years later by a visit to Wellingarden City to officially open the hospital named in her honour. Over the ensuing years, other visits to the county included Parmenter's School in Watford and celebrating the 150th anniversary of Rothamsted Research in Harpenden, as well as visits to Letchworth and Hawkshead campus of the Royal Veterinary College at Brookmans Park, which she opened in 1959 and returned to in 2003 when she was shown its work with one of her passions, horses. In June 2012, the county was honoured to welcome her on Diamond Jubilee Day when she arrived by train in Hitchin and was greeted by my predecessor, Lady Verulam, and crowds of schoolchildren in Market Place. She also visited Stevenage to open the new maternity wing at Lister Hospital. The Queen's last visit to the county was in 2016 to Berkhamsted, landing by helicopter on a hill in the town to celebrate the 475th anniversary of Berkhamsted School, of which she is patron. I vividly recall the huge crowds welcoming and cheering the country's longest-serving monarch. The Queen's Charities. Since the 18th century, an important role of the monarch is to support and encourage public and voluntary service, and the Queen, like other members of the royal family, has given her patronage to more than 600 charities, many of which have a presence in Hertfordshire, like the British Red Cross, YMCA, and the Scout Association and Girl Guiding. Over her long reign, Her Majesty has taken a keen interest in each and every one of the enormous number of organisations to which she has put her name, with visits around the country and keeping abreast of their activities. Some of these patronages were inherited from her father, and some have been inherited down the royal line from Queen Victoria. And as the Queen is now 96, some are being passed to younger members of the royal family to continue showing that keen interest. The patronage of some local organisations is taken up by Lord Lieutenants across the country as Her Majesty's personal representatives. Having had the honour to have met the Queen on several occasions, like my predecessors, I know that she has a soft spot for Hertfordshire. I am told by Sir Simon Bowes Lyon that the Queen has often visited St Paul's Waldenbury and spent time at her mother's old home, especially during her childhood. Jubilee celebrations. So how will we celebrate this amazing Jubilee in Hertfordshire? There will be street parties and big lunches held in towns and villages across the county over the long bank holiday weekend from June the 2nd to the 5th. The County Council has already had more than 500 applications for street closures, more than for the Diamond Jubilee. There will be beacons lit on Thursday, June the 2nd at 9:45 p.m. to mark the celebrations. I am aware of about 30 such beacons at significant locations, tying in with town parties right across Hertfordshire, and my deputy lieutenants and I will attend as many of these as possible to join in the celebrations. On Sunday, May 22nd, there was a Platinum Jubilee service of celebration in St Albans Cathedral, where the emphasis was on youth and the celebration of Her Majesty's incredible 7 decades of service to her people. And the Jubilee week will kick off with the Hertfordshire County Show on May the 28th to the 29th, bigger and better than ever this year, with special events celebrating the Platinum Jubilee and including my own Lord Lieutenant's Entrepreneurs Challenge. On July the 6th, the Lieutenancy, together with the International Organ Festival, are putting on a spectacular Jubilee concert in St Albans Cathedral with the London South Bank Sinfonia and over 200 singers, hosted by Gareth Malone in the presence of 2 members of the royal family. The Lieutenancy office has already been notified of a huge number of other events taking place around the county, on what will be a most memorable weekend in celebration of our monarch, who has dedicated her life to her people in Hertfordshire, the UK, and around the world.
Next, we have an item from TNF Soundings about the Queen's Platinum Jubilee.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, it's Tanya here with an article about events planned to mark our monarch's 70-year reign this year. In June this year, the UK will celebrate the Queen's Platinum Jubilee, marking 70 years since Queen Elizabeth II came to the throne. She is the first British monarch to reach the 70-year milestone, and the occasion will be celebrated across the UK during a special 4-day weekend from Thursday the 2nd of June until Sunday the 5th of June. The Jubilee weekend includes 2 bank holidays. One of these is the normal late May bank holiday that has been rescheduled a few days later this year. The other is an extra bank holiday granted this year only to mark the Queen's remarkable anniversary. Queen Elizabeth became monarch in 1952 on the death of her father, King George VI. She was just 25 when she became queen. The following year, 1953, her formal coronation service took place at Westminster Abbey in front of dignitaries from all over the world. In April this year, the Queen celebrated her 96th birthday. Sadly, the Queen has struggled with her health and mobility this year, causing her to drop out of a number of events in the months leading up to the Jubilee. However, the Jubilee weekend will see thousands of public and private events planned to commemorate her 70 years as Queen. These include at least 1,400 public events listed on the government's official Jubilee website, plus more than 1,700 local events such as street parties. There will also be a string of 1,500 Platinum Jubilee beacons lit throughout the United Kingdom, Channel Islands, Isle of Man and UK overseas territories on Thursday, the 2nd of June. Beacon chains, once used as a tool for communication, have now become a feature of royal anniversaries. Beacons have been used to mark key events in the Queen's reign, including her Silver Jubilee in 1977, her Golden Jubilee in 2002, her Diamond Jubilee in 2012, and Her Majesty's 90th birthday in 2016. Some of the biggest national jubilee events are being held in central London, including Trooping of the Colour, the Platinum Pageant, and a Platinum Party at the Palace. The Trooping of the Colour, also known as the Queen's Birthday Parade, comes first on the 2nd of June. Although the Queen's real birthday is in April, the Trooping of the Colour is held in June each year to mark the reigning monarch's official birthday. More than 1,400 soldiers, 200 horses and 400 musicians will take part in the Trooping of the Colour this year. Beginning at Buckingham Palace, the parade will move down the Mall to Horse Guards Parade, joined by members of the royal family on horseback and in carriages. The parade closes with an RAF flypast watched by the Queen and members of the royal family from the Buckingham Palace balcony. 2 days later, on Saturday the 4th of June, the BBC will stage and broadcast a Platinum Party at the Palace. This is a live concert from Buckingham Palace featuring some of the world's biggest entertainment stars, who will perform in celebration of the Queen's seven-decade reign. Then, rounding off the weekend, on Sunday the 5th of June, is the Platinum Jubilee Pageant. This will combine street art, theatre music, circus, carnival and costume to celebrate Her Majesty's reign and her dedication to the Commonwealth. The pageant involves around 10,000 people, including the military, as well as volunteers, performers, key workers and members of the public. The pageant will tell the story of the Queen's 70-year reign and how our society has changed over that time. If you can't make it to London for the celebrations, don't worry, because the BBC are planning a full weekend of Jubilee TV programmes. Their broadcasts will include coverage of the Trooping of the Colour, the party at the Palace and the Platinum Pageant, along with other programmes reflecting on the past 70 years. Thank you.
TNF Soundings.
And if you feel like joining in the celebrations, here are some events in the local district, and this is also read by Wendy.
There are a number of celebrations of the Platinum Jubilee around the St Albans district. Firstly, as part of the Jubilee celebrations, the annual Alban Street Festival will take place on the Bank Holiday Thursday on the 2nd of June from 3 p.m. until 10 p.m. in St Peter Street. There'll be live music, food and drink, and children's activities, and it all culminates in a beacon lighting ceremony at 9:45 p.m. to tie in with the national beacon celebrations. In Harpenden, the community festival will be held on Harpenden Common on Thursday the 2nd of June from noon until 6 p.m. with live music, food and drink, and children's activities. Again, it will culminate with a beacon lighting ceremony at 9:45 p.m. St Stephen's Parish Council are hosting a celebration also on Thursday the 2nd of June from 6 p.m. until 10 p.m. in Greenwood Park, Chiswell Green. There will be live music during the evening and there will be hot food and a beer tent for refreshments. They will also light a beacon and there'll be a fireworks finale. There will be no parking on site except for blue badge holders, and they are urging everyone to walk, cycle or car share where possible. Just across the North Orbital Road, the Park Street Residents Association are organising a vintage gala and picnic on Friday the 3rd of June from 12:30 p.m. till 4 p.m. at the Park Street Recreational Ground. There will be fairground rides and sideshows, stalls, a tombola and lots of surprises. There will be a licensed bar and a barbecue, or you can bring your own picnic if you wish. Another celebration will be held in Jersey Farm Woodland Park on Saturday the 4th of June from 1 p.m. till 11 p.m. There will be family activities in the afternoon and live music throughout. The evening will finish off with a fireworks display at 10:30 p.m. Please note there will be no parking at the event.
And while we're on the subject of events, and as we just heard in the Lord Lieutenant's article that Wendy just read, we mustn't forget to tell you that the Herts County Show takes place very soon, on the 28th and 29th of May, and this is what their publicity says. The Herts County Show is one of our county's flagship events, a celebration of everything county, country living, food and farming, offering something special for each and every one of our 35,000 plus visitors. Spectacular entertainment in the main ring as we welcome back the gravity-defying motorcycle stunt team Bold Dog Lings as our main attraction for 2022. The very best of local shopping with deliciously curated produce in our food court and iconic Made in Herts zones with local foods and local crafts that showcase the best of Hertfordshire to the world. There is a packed timetable of livestock and equine classes, and head to our farmyard and countryside zones and awe-inspiring plant and machinery from the past and present. The Hertfordshire County Show is organised by the Hertfordshire Agricultural Society, a registered charity whose aims are to educate our Hertfordshire communities and celebrate food, farming and our glorious countryside. All profits from our events support our educational work through which we engage with local schools, children and communities. And after that, we now have episode 2 of the new series of the 10 Today exercise programme.
Hello everyone, this is 10 Today, a 10-minute set of exercises to do at home to help keep yourself active. Before we get to today's presenter, a couple of housekeeping points to note. The 10 Today project is funded by the Big Lottery and Sport England, and when you're doing the exercises, it's important that you don't push yourself too far, and by taking part, you agree to 10 Today's terms and conditions. You can read these terms and conditions at tnflink.uk/10T, and the 10T is the digit 1, the digit 0, and the letter T. And please remember that you agree to take part at your own risk. Today's exercises are brought to you by Mary, and here she is.
Hello and welcome to 10 Today, Series 2, Session Number 2. These are short, 10-minute physical activity routines, which will get you moving and stretching. They're great for your health, including boosting your mood. And very importantly, they're designed to support your everyday movements, your functional fitness, your flexibility, balance and mobility, such as when you have to reach up, turn, bend down and so on. These simple routines will help you with that. Just take them at your own pace. There are plenty of options. If an exercise feels too much, then just take it easy and have a break. All the exercises can be done either standing up or sitting down. Just do whatever feels good for you today. When lifting your arms or knees, only go as far as is comfortable. And if you have any problems with your knees or hips, take care not to twist them during the movements. It can also help to pull in your tummy when you're bending your back. And just breathe normally throughout these activities. We want you all to do these activities safely. You are responsible for monitoring how you're feeling throughout the sessions. And if you feel any discomfort or pain, for example, if you feel unwell or dizzy or experience palpitations, then please stop and seek medical advice. By taking part, you agree to our terms and conditions. Please read our terms and conditions on the 10 Today website at 10today.co.uk. Please remember, you agree to take part at your own risk. If you're remaining seated, it would be ideal if you can use a hard chair, preferably one without arms, such as a dining chair that you can sit upright in with a straight back and your feet flat on the floor. If you're standing, just step your feet hip-width apart, relax your shoulders and take a good strong stance. And you might want to have a sturdy chair nearby to hold onto sometimes for balance. So we're going to start with a warm-up. You're just going to quickly tap or pat different parts of your body. So briefly tap along each arm, one at a time, in different places. Your upper arm, your forearm and your wrist. And do the same on both arms. Then pat the top of both legs, just quickly tapping up and down your legs in various places towards your knees for a few seconds. Great, you should be nicely warmed up now and ready to move. So we're going to start with swing back. So with your feet hip width apart and your shoulders relaxed, stretch both arms out in front of you at shoulder height with your palms facing down. With your feet still facing forward, turn your upper body to the left and swing both arms back on that same side so they're pointing past your shoulders or just as far as is comfortable. Then come back to the centre and turn your upper body to the right this time, swinging your arms back as you go. So keep going as you turn each time from left to right. Swing your arms back, keeping them as level as you can. So turning left, back to the centre, then to the right. That's it. Just a few more times now. Try to stretch your arms out a little bit further if you can. This is great for your hip rotation, your shoulders and your arms. Next up, it's spring up. Take a slightly wider stance with your feet to start with and your toes pointing slightly outwards. If you're standing, bend your knees slightly into a squat position. You're going to raise up and then lower back down again, bending those knees. Lift both arms to around waist height with the elbows bent and palms facing upwards as you rise, then lower them down again as you go back into that squat position. Keep going with this for a few more times. Now, if you're sitting and you're able to lift your bottom slightly off the chair, you can raise up that way. If not, just press through the soles of your feet so you get that contraction in your legs. So just a couple more. Come up and then come down again. Try and go a little bit higher and down a bit lower if you can. It's great for your inner thighs, your legs and your buttocks. Now it's time for row the boat. As the name says, this is a rowing action. You're going to start by stepping your right foot forwards and leaning forwards. Stretch both arms out in front of you with your palms down. Keep your arms a few inches apart and at shoulder height. Now make two fists as if you're reaching to grasp the oars. Then in one flowing movement, pull your arms back, bring your upper body back and step back. Then step forward with your left foot. As you lean forwards, stretch out your arms, gripping those oars again. Then pull back and step back. So just keep going with this movement for a few more times, alternating your feet each time as you reach out to grasp the oars. Try to pull a little bit further back if you can and grip tighter to work your wrists and hands. This is really good for your arms, shoulders and your balance. Now we're going to carry the cauldron. So raise both arms straight up in the air above your head as high as you can. Imagine the shape of a big round cauldron and that there are three stacked one on top of each other. Bring both arms slowly downwards as if you're tracing the circular outlined shape of these three cauldrons with your hands. Bend your knees as you go lower. So follow the outline to make circular movements with your arms. First going out around that top cauldron, then bringing your hands in, out again around the second cauldron and back in, making a lovely flowing in and out movement until you reach the bottom. Straighten back up and repeat, starting with your arms high above your head and tracing the outlines of those three cauldrons to make circular in and out movements as your arms come down. Let's just do this a couple more times, making even bigger circles if you can. This is another one that's good for your shoulders and your arms. That's great. So next up, it's Sea Storm. So step your right foot forward with your arms stretched straight out in front of you at shoulder height. Keep your arms body width apart with your palms facing up. Then sweep them upwards together above your head. Then turn your palms down and step back as you bring your arms back down to your sides. Now step forward with your left foot, arms stretched out in front with your palms up, and repeat that lovely flowing arm movement, sweeping the arms up with your palms up and lowering them down with your palms down. Do this a few more times, stepping forwards as the arms go up and stepping back as the arms come down. Do just try to get your arms a little bit higher if you can. This is great for your back, your shoulders and your arms. The next one is Circle the Sky. So with the usual starting position of your feet hip-width apart and shoulders relaxed, bend forwards with soft knees if you're standing and lower both arms until your hands are in front of your knees. They might be lower if you're sitting. Then straighten back up, raising both arms above your head and pushing your hands upwards. Keep your arms as straight and as high as you can. Then rotating your wrist, use your hands to make separate small circles in the air. Make those circles 3 or 4 times, then bend your knees again and lower your arms, reaching the hands down to your knees. Straighten up, push your hands upwards and repeat those circles in the air with your hands. Do this movement a couple more times now. You can make wider circles if you can and reach a little bit higher. This is really good for your chest and core and your balance too. Well done. Now it's cloud hands. So just position your hands a few inches out in front of you as if you're holding a ball with one hand underneath the ball and the other one on top. The top hand should be roughly level with your forehead and the bottom hand level with your upper body. Then swap the position of your hands by lowering the elbow of your top arm and raising the other one. Turn your hands continuously from top to bottom and back again. First one way, then the other. Then start turning your upper body as well, keeping your feet still and facing forwards. Turn first to the right, back to the centre, and then to the left. Back to the centre, turning your hands all the time. Keep going with this movement, just turning your upper body from side to side. Take your arms a bit higher if you can, or imagine you're holding a bigger ball. This is good for your coordination and balance. Next up, it's hands to feet. If you're standing, you can hold on to a sturdy chair for balance. Lift one foot off the floor, bending your knee as far as is comfortable. Then aim to briefly touch the foot of your raised leg with the opposite hand. If you can't reach your foot, don't worry, just reach down towards it. Lower your foot back down to the floor, then do the same again with your other leg and the opposite hand. If you're standing and holding onto a chair for balance, don't alternate each time. Just do a few on the left side and then a few more on the right. Carry on, just lifting each leg and reaching your opposite hand down towards your raised foot. Lift your leg a little bit higher if you can. This is another one that's good for your balance and coordination. So this next one is called single arm circles. So raise both arms and stretch them straight out to each side, keeping them at shoulder level if you can, palms facing down. Then rotate both arms backwards at the same time, moving them from your shoulders to create small circles with each arm. Do that for a count of 10. That's great. Then rotate both arms forwards, creating circles in the opposite direction for another count of 10. Keep going, making bigger circles if you can, and keeping your arms at shoulder level. This is a really great one for your arms and your shoulders too. And the last one is aim low. So with your arms down by your sides, you're going to do a lunge. So step your right foot forward and bend that knee as far as comfortable, making sure it isn't reaching past your toes when you look down. Keep your other leg positioned behind with that foot slightly raised on its toes. It's just the same if you're sitting, and you might want to come a bit further forward in your chair so you've got more room to move. Then swing both arms forwards in front of you and up as high as is comfortable. Now step back as you bring your arms back down to your sides. Then switch feet. So you're stepping forward with your left foot, bending that knee and swinging your arms out in front and up at the same time. Then step back, pulling your arms back again. Keep going with this, just alternating your feet each time. That's good. A couple more times now. It's another good one for your core and balance. So that's all the exercises. So we're just going to finish with a quick shake to cool down. So raise both arms up above your head towards the ceiling and just briefly wave your hands and arms in the air. Then lift one leg slightly from the floor if you can. Shake it out in the air for a second or two. Raise the other leg and shake that one too. Or you can just shake your upper body instead. So that's the end of the session. Great work, everyone. We hope you enjoyed it. Doing 10 today just 3 times a week can have positive benefits for your physical health and improve your well-being too. It's short, it's fun, and you'll simply feel better. So do keep going.
We now have our piece of music, Jazz 3 by Gothby, in its entirety. And now, here are some well-known people whose birthdays fall this week. On the 29th of May 1917, John F. Kennedy was born near Boston, Massachusetts, USA. He served as the 35th President of the United States from 1961 until 1963. He graduated from Harvard University in 1940, and in the Second World War commanded a series of torpedo boats, the most notable of which was PT-109. This was famous for being sunk after being rammed and cut in two by a Japanese destroyer. Kennedy's rescue of his crewmen made him a war hero. After the war, he became a member of the U.S. Congress and then a U.S. Senator. He beat Richard Nixon in the 1960 presidential election and was in office during the Cuban Missile Crisis, the start of U.S. involvement in Vietnam, and the failed Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba. He was assassinated in Dallas, Texas, on the 22nd of November, 1963. Clarinetist Benny Goodman, known as the King of Swing, was born on the 30th of May in 1909 in Chicago. He was the ninth of 12 children and learned clarinet at his local synagogue. By the age of 13, he was playing on Lake Michigan excursion boats and in dance bands. Goodman went on to become a bandleader and recording artist, working with Glenn Miller, Tommy Dorsey and Billie Holiday, amongst others. He had many hits and is credited with starting the swing era in music. And, during an era of racial segregation, he led one of the first integrated jazz groups. By the mid-1940s, the craze for big band swing had faded, but Goodman continued playing and recorded both jazz and classical music right up to his death in 1986. On the 31st of May, 1939, Terry Waite was born in Cheshire. He came to the world's attention in 1987, when he was the Archbishop of Canterbury's Assistant for Anglican Communion Affairs. Some years earlier, he had successfully negotiated the release of hostages in Iran and in Libya. So when more hostages were taken in Lebanon, he travelled there to attempt their release. Instead, in what became a high-profile story, Waite was himself taken hostage and would remain one for almost 5 years, the first 4 of which he spent in solitary confinement. After his release, he wrote 3 best-selling books, the first 2 about his time in captivity, and the third, called Travels with a Primate, is a humorous account of his journeys with his former boss, Archbishop of Canterbury, Robert Runcie. Bob Monkhouse was born on the 1st of June 1928 in Beckenham, Kent. While still at school, Monkhouse wrote for The Beano and The Dandy, so it was no surprise he began his adult career as a scriptwriter for comedians such as Arthur Askey, Jimmy Edwards, Ted Ray, Max Miller and Bob Hope. Monkhouse began appearing in comedy films in the 50s and 60s, such as the first Carry On film, Carry On Sergeant, in 1958. He also presented Candid Camera and Sunday Night at the London Palladium. A respected stand-up comedian, Monkhouse was renowned for his talent at ad-libbing, but in his later years he was probably better known for hosting television quiz shows. One of his biggest successes was The Golden Shot, but there were many others, including Celebrity Squares, Family Fortunes, and Bob's Full House. Audiences for his shows regularly topped 15 million. An expert on the history of silent cinema and a film collector, Monkhouse owned an extensive private collection, some of which he had helped recover and restore. When examined by the British Film Institute in 2008, 5 years after Monkhouse's death, the collection was found to contain many radio and TV shows long thought lost. Monkhouse was also an avid campaigner for the disabled. In 1993, he was appointed an OBE for services to entertainment. The English composer, Sir Edward Elgar, was born on the 2nd of June, 1857, near Worcester. Self-taught and of humble origins, he was the son of a piano tuner, he was something of an outsider in music circles and did not achieve success until his 40s, when his Enigma Variations and The Dream of Gerontius led him to being described as a leading and quintessential English composer. But he is probably best known for Pomp and Circumstance, a suite of 5 marches composed between 1901 and 1930. Originally purely orchestral, the first of these had words added for the coronation of Edward VII in 1902 and has become an unofficial English national anthem, Land of Hope and Glory. 2 years later, Elgar was knighted. In 1931, he famously conducted the London Symphony Orchestra, making recordings of his works at the opening of what later became known as Abbey Road Studios. He died in 1934 at the age of 76. Josephine Baker, real name Frieda Josephine MacDonald, was born on the 3rd of June 1906 in St. Louis, Missouri, USA. She was perhaps the most famous erotic dancer of her day. An American by birth, she spent most of her career in Europe, especially in France. Her performance at the Folies Bergères in 1927 caused a sensation in the city, and her costume, consisting only of a short skirt of artificial bananas and a beaded necklace, became an iconic image. In later shows in Paris, she was often accompanied on stage by her pet cheetah, Chiquita, who frequently escaped into the orchestra pit, where it terrorised the musicians, adding another element of excitement to the shows. She became a major star and tours, films, and the leading role in an opera all followed. During the Second World War, Baker used her status as an entertainer and her freedom to travel to help the French resistance, hiding fugitives, gathering information, and acting as a courier. She was later awarded the Resistance Medal, the Croix de Guerre, and was named a Chevalier of the Légion d'Honneur. After the war, she resumed her successful career, but also became a civil rights activist, notably refusing to perform before segregated audiences, having witnessed racial violence as a child and experienced discrimination as an adult. Actress, filmmaker and humanitarian Angelina Jolie was born on the 4th of June 1975 in Los Angeles, USA. The daughter of actor John Voight, she made her film debut at the age of 7 alongside her father. Her first major role came in the film Hackers in 1995. Since then, she has appeared in numerous productions, notably Girl Interrupted, Lara Croft Tomb Raider, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and Maleficent, as well as writing and directing. She is also a highly regarded campaigner for many causes, especially refugees, and is a special envoy to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. Jolie has been regularly cited as one of the most powerful and influential people in the entertainment industry, and as one of the world's most beautiful women. Perhaps inevitably, her personal life has been the subject of wide publicity, particularly her three marriages to and subsequent divorces from actors Johnny Lee Miller, Billy Bob Thornton, and Brad Pitt, as well as her family life and her health. The latter came to the fore in 2013 when she underwent a preventive double mastectomy after learning that she had an 87% risk of developing breast cancer due to a defective gene. Her public announcement of the mastectomy and her willingness to discuss the issues around it attracted widespread publicity, and the Angelina effect, as it became known, led not only to greater awareness of the disease, but also to a widespread increase in gene testing and a significant reduction in the cost of treatment. And finally, some notable events which happened this week in the past. On the 29th of May 1953, Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay became the first explorers to reach the summit of Mount Everest. The pair are part of a British expedition, and after a fitful night's sleep at approximately 1,500 feet from the top of the 29,035-foot mountain, Hillary, from New Zealand, and Norgay, a Sherpa of Nepal, made their final assault on the summit. News of their achievement broke around the world on the 2nd of June to coincide with the coronation of Queen Elizabeth II. Many people in Britain hailed it as a good omen for the country's future. On the 30th of May, 1431, Joan of Arc was burnt at the stake for heresy in Rouen in the English-controlled Normandy region of France. Born in Domremy in 1412, the daughter of a tenant farmer, Joan is considered a heroine of France for her role in the Siege of Orléans and the coronation of Charles VII of France during the Hundred Years' War. In 1920, nearly 500 years after her death, Joan was canonized as a saint by the Roman Catholic Church. On the 31st of May 1977, the BBC banned the Sex Pistols single God Save the Queen. Timed with typical Sex Pistols flair to coincide with the Queen's Silver Jubilee, the release of God Save the Queen was greeted by precisely the torrent of negative press that the Sex Pistols manager, Malcolm McLaren, had hoped for. While some in the tabloid press accused the band of treason, the BBC was more moderate in its condemnation. In response to the lyrics, God Save the Queen, She Ain't No Human Being, the corporation labelled the recording as an example of gross bad taste. Despite the ban, the record flew off the shelves and was only prevented from reaching number one by the ultimate anti-punk Rod Stewart's I Don't Want to Talk About It. On the 1st of June in 2008, a massive early morning fire tore through the Universal Studios theme park in California. The fire also struck the studio back lot in Universal City, destroying a trove of irreplaceable recordings by some of the greatest artists in music history. Thousands of archived digital and video film copies were also lost, as was one of the park's most popular attractions, the King Kong Encounter. The fire caused no serious injuries, but Universal were severely criticised by many artists who had lost the master recordings of their works for the lack of fire prevention measures which allowed this tragedy to happen. On the 2nd of June 1953, Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II was formally crowned as Monarch of the United Kingdom. The lavish ceremony held in Westminster Abbey was attended by over 8,000 guests from across the Commonwealth of Nations. Hundreds of millions of people listened to the service on the radio, and for the first time, those fortunate enough to own one were able to watch proceedings on live television. After the ceremony, millions of rain-drenched spectators cheered the 27-year-old monarch and her husband, the Duke of Edinburgh, as they passed along a 5-mile procession route in a gilded horse-drawn carriage. On the 3rd of June 1965, Major Edward H. White II made history by becoming the first American to walk in space. Major White emerged from the hatch of his Gemini 4 spacecraft some 120 miles above the Earth. Attached to the craft by a 25-foot tether, the astronaut spent 20 minutes moving around with the aid of a handheld oxygen propulsion gun. As a spacewalker, White had been preceded by Russian cosmonaut Alexei Leonov, who became the first man ever to walk in space 3 months earlier. But at least White didn't suffer Leonov's embarrassment when his spacesuit inflated so much during his spacewalk that he couldn't get back inside his Soyuz spacecraft. He had to vent some of the oxygen from his suit, but even then he was barely able to re-enter the craft. On the 4th of June, 1896, at approximately 4 a.m, Henry Ford unveiled his quadricycle to the world from a shed behind his home in Detroit. Working as the chief engineer of the Edison Illuminating Company, Ford used his spare time to experiment with his pet project to build a horseless carriage with a petrol-powered engine. The quadricycle had 2 driving speeds, no reverse, no brakes, and a doorbell as a horn. From these humble beginnings, Ford would go on to create one of the largest and most successful car manufacturers in the world. And with that, we come to the end of this platinum-flavoured programme. Many thanks to Wendy, Andy, Ian and Christina, our readers today, to Angela, who wrote the radio highlights, and to John, who read them, to Mark, who makes all the copies of the programme, and to Michelle, who ensures you get yours. So that's all from News Extra for May 2022. Goodbye.